Intelligent design and DNA. The scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio.
Fred, if you think this experiment works, that's good enough for me. Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, creation speaker and software engineer.
This is Real Science Radio's one-way speed of light experiment proposal. Fred, if people could use this to measure the one-way speed of light, you and I should split a Nobel Prize.
Well, yeah, because they say that it's impossible to do.
It's impossible.
You can't do it.
It's just impossible. And it's sort of like going on the radio and saying, hey, we've invented a perpetual motion machine. I mean, these guys should get the hook and get pulled out of the studio. So if anyone out there can falsify, if they could show us how we tricked ourselves and we somehow snuck the two-way speed of light into our experiment, our proposal to measure the one-way speed of light, then I'd say they get the grand prize.
I agree. And I've got the grand prize in my hand right now. I'm kind of waving it.
Yeah?
It's a $10 gift certificate to Chick-fil-A.
Okay.
So if you're especially, if you're really hungry,
That's the grand prize, what in the world is like second place or third place?
The card says, put me away for a yummy day.
Okay.
So here's your chance.
Okay. So if somebody could prove that our proposed experiment will not work, you win. The first person to prove it. If 30 people prove it, only the first person gets the grand prize. So on September 3rd, 2019, here at RSR, we posted on our website a proposed experiment. Now, there are a lot of brilliant physicists who say this can't be done.
Yep.
Like Einstein and some creationists too.
Yeah,
right?
Jason Lyle, Dr. Hartnett.
Yes. Brilliant.
And
astrophysicist, award-winning physicist.
Yeah, we talked about this on the last couple shows.
And they say you can't, but we posted our proposed experiment that might enable the measurement of the one-way speed of light. And on today's program, right at the top, Fred, we need to describe our proposal, and then we could talk about the problem generally. But if somebody tried to visualize the experiment, well, for one, they could go to the website, right, and see a diagram of it, see the configuration.
So just go to rsr.org. It'll be right there on the front page.
You'll see the image, the JPEG, and you'll see a bottle like laid on its side with some cameras. But first, let's list the equipment you need for this experiment.
Sure. So first you have to break into Caltech and steal their super fast cameras.
Yes. Now, we don't recommend that as Christians.
We don't. We don't.
Don't really do it. But that's what you would need. They have super fast cameras. We're talking billions of frames per second. Fred, on the internet, there's this big channel called the Slow-Mo Guys. Mm-hmm. They love to film things in slow motion, like a watermelon being blown up with a shotgun or something, and film it in slow motion, then play it back, and everybody laughs and says, gee whiz, look at that, right? And over a few years, the cameras they've used, they've made a lot of money, so they've gotten faster and faster cameras.
Much better.
To show things slower and slower, slow motion.
And we got videos of this on this website.
Yes.
On our webpage.
Well, it turns out that one of their more recent videos, they went to Caltech, California Institute of Technology, where they have developed the fastest cameras in the world. We're talking not tens of thousands of frames per second, like the slow-mo guys. They get 100,000 frames. They're so excited.
Yeah.
We're not talking about a million. We're talking about billions, hundreds of billions of frames per second. It's astounding. So what else do you need other than the Caltech super fast cameras?
You need a bottle, a lab quality laser.
A laser, okay.
And a mirror.
All right. You know, Fred, we recently, because of our interest in the two-slit experiment, we were pricing lasers and beam splitters online. And it's surprising how affordable a lot of this equipment is. If you want to shoot out a laser pulse, even one photon at a time, or a burst of photons in a laser, I mean, you could get equipment to do this stuff.
Yeah. So, the trick is getting those super fast cameras.
Okay.
And then you can fill the bottle first with some slightly milky water.
Okay.
And then for the second run, we want to fill it with water vapor.
Okay. And so we're going to use this super fast camera with billions of frames per second to attempt to measure the one-way speed of light. And on our last program, we aired a few clips from a famous YouTube channel, Veritasium, on trying to measure the one-way speed of light and why you can't do it. And he mentioned real briefly in that video, he said, oh, you might think you could use super fast camera like at Caltech, but you can't do that because you're sneaking in the round trip speed of light.
And that's
it just won't work.
Yeah. But the way this experiment is designed, we're not doing that. At least it doesn't seem like it.
Right.
So that's why you have a chance, again, at a $10 gift prize if you can find a way that we unwittingly snuck in the two-way speed of light.
Yes, yes. So, in fact, when that video first came out in 2019 of you are seeing light being shot through a water bottle, if you're on campus at Caltech, you go to a vending machine, you put in $2, you get a water bottle, and the label says Caltech on it, right?
Mm-hmm.
They take that, they put it on its side, and they have their super fast camera looking at that bottle, and they shoot light through the bottle, a pulse of light, like a laser pulse. And it's astounding. You could actually see the light going through the water, the very slightly milky water.
Yeah.
If it was a pure vacuum, you wouldn't be able to see the light, right? It has to interfere with something so you could see the progress in the leading edge of the pulse of light. And sure enough, Fred, they get hundreds of frames of the light progressing through this bottle. It's just
really
stunning.
Cool. Yeah.
So when I showed that video to some physicists and said, isn't this video measuring the one-way speed of light? And they dismiss it out of hand, and they say no, because the circuitry in the camera, the way it's set up, you're actually sneaking in the two-way speed of light, the round-trip speed.
Mm-hmm.
It's not measuring the one-way speed of light. And so I'm looking at it, and I'm thinking, wow, they would say that because it's impossible. They don't even have to think hard. They just say that. No, it doesn't work. So, in fact, Veritasium in his video, he said, okay, what if you use a high-speed camera like at Caltech? No, that won't work because you're sneaking in the round-trip speed of light. So how do we on the radio describe this for those 17 last viewers who haven't gone to the website to look at the picture, to look at the configuration? Fred, it's a bottle laying on its side, right?
Yep.
And at the top of the bottle where it narrows to the neck and you have the bottle top that screws on, that's where you put the laser and you point the laser toward the bottom of the bottle.
And that's where there's a reflector to reflect that light back. And again, this bottle's on its side.
Yeah, so a little cheap mirror at the bottom of the bottle, so it'll send the light back, so you got the light going from the top of the bottle to the bottom, and then hitting the mirror and going back.
Yep.
Okay. And the laser and the reflector, Fred, they're not close to what you would call the middle of the bottle. They're right out at the edge, the bottom edge, like near the perimeter of the bottle. Like the plastic of the bottle, they're just barely inside the plastic.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just above the surface.
And
okay.
Let's say the bottle is 200 millimeters tall, and the laser beam is only 1 or 2 millimeters inside the plastic bottle. So the laser is, it's going through the length of the bottle, but real close to the plastic. It's like barely in. It's not near the center of the bottle. It's right out at the edge.
Okay.
And then under the bottle, looking up, you have three cameras.
Three of these super fast cameras.
Yeah. Now, you could do it with two, but quite often you get three data points, and there's less thought that you've got an error in your data.
Yeah. It's kind of redundancy or confirmation of the other two cameras.
Yeah. Like two or three witnesses establish
like
a matter.
That. Yeah.
The Bible says.
Let's go with three.
Go with three cameras. And the cameras are virtually touching the bottle. So you're minimizing the distance from the laser pulse to the lens of the camera and to the camera itself. And, you know, we're doing this in a bottle because that's what Caltech did.
Yeah.
But you could actually extend it. You could do it in a lab where the laser beam is going 10 meters and you put three cameras right alongside of it.
Mm-hmm.
And we have it. So one camera is toward the front of the bottle. The third camera is toward the bottom of the bottle. And camera number two is right in the middle.
Right in the middle. Right
between
them.
So what is the idea then? Why do we have these three cameras? Well, you turn on the cameras. You turn on the laser light. You should send a pulse, just like we see in the videos that you can look at. Just go to rsr.org. You'll look at these videos. The cameras will record the pulse of light going by their field of view.
Yep.
One after the other, unless it's instantaneous. But they'll record the light going by their field of view, and then the light will hit the reflector at the bottom and go back, and then they'll record the light coming back. Now, each of these cameras, you could do it using their 100 billion frames per second camera or their 10 trillion frames per second camera, which they have. It's absolutely stunning. And here's what we predict will be the results. So that camera number one, let's say it captures 10 frames of the pulse of light, and it's going by its field of view from right to left.
Okay.
So it's going toward the bottom of the bottle.
So out of how many total frames then for this light to travel one direction?
Well, let's say it's 60, 30 to go to the bottom of the bottle and 30 to go back to the top.
Gotcha.
Okay.
So one direction would be 30 frames.
So one direction. And we're using, obviously, absurdly rough numbers.
Yeah.
But
just
to communicate
what
the concept.
We're doing.
So camera number one, you do the experiment. It gets 10 frames of this pulse of light passing by its field of view. Camera two gets the same thing. Camera three gets the same thing. There's no way to know how much time it took for that light to get from camera one, two to three because you'd have to sneak in the round trip speed of light to look at the electronics and say, how long did it take to get from camera one to two to three? That would be cheating.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not the point of this. So then the light hits the reflector at the bottom and then it comes back. And this is where it gets interesting, because let's say the three cameras cover the entirety of the length of the bottle. So the field of view of the first camera covers a third of the height of the bottle,
mm-hmm.
the second third, the third, the final third. So the third camera, as the light is going through its field of view, it immediately hits the reflector and comes right back. So the third camera has no blank frames.
No empty frames.
No empty frames in between the light going in one direction toward the bottom of the bottle and then reflecting back. Whereas camera number two will show 10 frames of light and then 10 frames that are empty, just darkness, because the light is now going past camera three, then it hits the reflector, then it's coming back another 10 frames of black,
yep.
of blank, empty frames, and then it will show 10 frames where the pulse of lights come back into its field of view, now from the left to the right, and here you see 10 frames, now it's gone. And camera number one will be similar to what camera number two saw, except it won't have 20 blank frames. It will have 40 blank frames.
Yeah. So it would have the 10 frames initially, then there'd be 20 frames blank on its way to the end of the bottle.
Right.
And then when the light reflects back, that's going to be 20 blank frames before the light comes back into view of camera one. So that's 40 frames.
Right. 40 empty frames. And then 10 final frames where it sees the pulse of light again coming from the left to the right. And then the experiment is done. And you do it first with milky water. Because like we said earlier, if light is traveling in a vacuum, then you're not going to see it. If it's a laser and it's not spreading out and there's no scatter, you're not going to see it. So at Caltech, they put some barely milky water in the bottle so you could see the light. And as it's scattering, as it's making its progress through the bottle. Now, we need to talk about how light slows up in different mediums, mm-hmm. and we'll get to that. But first, you do the experiment with the bottle filled with milky water. And then, when you know how to do it and it's working, you see the results, then you get closer to the speed of light in a vacuum. You do the experiment again with the bottle filled with water vapor. So then that laser flash is traveling much closer to the speed of light in a vacuum. So that's the idea.
Okay.
Now, this is radio. Do you think our listeners were able to follow that? And I don't mean somebody like AOC, a progressive, who has a hard time understanding the simplest arithmetic. I mean members of the brightest audience in the country, Fred. Do you think, even though this is radio and they can't see the configuration, do you think we communicated it so that people can understand it?
Well, I think we have. You know, unless you're wearing a mask, then your comprehension level drops.
Whoa.
We had a show on that.
Whoa, we did a show on that. You know, NASA research that when your carbon dioxide increases, it hurts your comprehension measurably and you get a lot more headaches.
Yeah, double the amount.
Yeah. And we're talking at levels that you get with a mask. When you put a mask on, it doubles your carbon dioxide. If you're sitting, if you're walking around the office, it triples.
Yeah,
your
triple than what you would
normal
have
carbon
in an office.
Dioxide intake.
Yep,
which is a poison. Liberals hate carbon, right?
Yeah,
carbon dioxide.
Yeah.
Except when they force feed it to kids in school.
Oh man,
then they love
yep.
it.
Yep.
So Fred, why don't we now talk through this?
Okay, so the field of physics, almost with one voice, has maintained for over a century that the one-way speed of light cannot be measured.
Oh, yeah.
And therefore, it cannot be shown to be equal to its round-trip speed.
So do these high-speed cameras require a reassessment of that long-standing claim? Now, we mentioned Einstein, Albert Einstein, and creationist PhDs Jason Lyle and John Hartnett. Well, they point out and agree with Albert Einstein in his paper in 1905 on special relativity. He presented a thought experiment in space, and he said, let a ray of light depart from point A and let it be reflected at point B and reach point A again. And in this paper, Fred, Einstein describes not the measurement of light's one-way speed, but he says you have to establish it by definition. By definition, you have to say, and he goes on, that the time needed for the light to travel from A to B is equal to the time it needs to travel from B to A.
And that's an assumption he's making.
Yes. And so many people would think, well, of course that's the case. But Einstein had the insight, and really he was the father of quantum mechanics in a lot of ways. He had the insight to realize that with physics, things are happening that you would never dream might happen when you approach things like the speed of light.
Yeah.
Or quantized light, that light is a photon, and so on. So defining the speed of light in both directions in this way, it's called doing it by convention.
Yes. And so regarding this, Einstein continued, We assume that this definition of synchrony is free from contradiction, and we assume the quantity, C, to be a universal constant, the velocity of light in empty space.
Mm. This thing is called ESC, for Einstein's synchrony convention.
Yeah, and again, it's the stipulation that the speed of light's the same in both directions.
He says you can't average the speed and claim that you're doing something that's actually valid. He says you have to acknowledge that you're making an assumption. It's a stipulation. It is, by definition, we're saying that the speed of light is the same in both directions. 100 years later, enter creationist astrophysicist Dr. Jason Lyle. He's a friend of RSR, and in fact, cosmologist Dr. John Hartnett, another friend of Real Science Radio. And Jason Lyle, with support from John Hartnett, he lays out the case that creationists do not have a speed of light problem. Because when the atheist says that light doesn't have time in a young universe to reach the Earth from millions or billions of light years away, Jason says, well, you've never read Einstein.
Yeah.
Right? Because Einstein pointed out that no one knows how long the light would take to get from a star to the Earth.
Yeah.
It could be instantaneous.
Yeah, the physics allows it to be instantaneous.
A lot
of people don't know that.
As far as all the math of special relativity, all of the math of physics and all of our experimentation so far, perhaps excluding these Caltech cameras, but so far everything would work exactly the same if light was infinitely fast in one direction and came back half of what we call the speed of light on the return trip.
Yeah. So in one case, Einstein makes a stipulation that it's the same both directions, and Jason Lyle, rightly so, he has the right, according to the laws of physics, to say, hey, I can stipulate that it's infinitely fast in one direction.
Yes. Now, Jason Lyle's theory, it's called ASC, not Einstein's, but this is an isotropic synchrony convention. A lot of syllables there, but it means that the light doesn't travel the same speed in both directions.
Yep.
So Jason Lyle's ASC, it's a bit more complicated than just saying it travels at infinite speed toward us and half the speed of light once it's, say, bouncing off the Earth and heading back into space. Actually, Jason developed a formula, and the formula enables you to calculate the speed of light, if ASC is accurate, based on the angle of the light toward the observer. If the light is coming straight at the observer, you use Jason's formula, which deals with the sine of theta, the sine of the angle of the light toward the observer. If it's coming toward the observer, it's traveling at infinite speed. So you're seeing the galaxies. If you see a supernova, a star exploding, it exploded at the exact moment that you saw it explode.
Yeah, exactly.
The light that's going away from the observer travels at half C, or one half what we think of 186,000 miles per second. Light that's going past the observer, like perpendicular past, that would be traveling at exactly C, or what we think of as the round trip speed of light. So that's Jason's model.
Yeah. Which again, using Einstein, solves the young Earth starlight problem.
Yeah. If it's correct.
If it's correct. True.
It may not convince many anti-creationists, Fred. I bet you most anti-creationists could not even get themselves to utter this sentence. Well, I doubt that's the case, but I admit that you answered the problem.
Yeah, true.
They would not
be able to do that.
No, not even 1/10 of 1% would have the intellectual courage, because they're afraid. You know, ultimately, they're afraid of Judgment Day.
Yeah.
And so they're afraid of truth. So they can't concede anything. So they can't concede that Einstein was right and the light might be coming at the Earth at infinite speed.
Yep.
So let's hear some audio from the slow-mo guys when they made their video at Caltech.
Right, okay, so what we're seeing here is the bottles that's been comped in, basically. Yeah, so this camera only detects the light itself.
The Caltech bottle, Fred, it's amazing.
Oh, it is.
Laser light, which is why you don't really see
anything. The light go through it.
Else other than the light looking like that. And then we comp in the picture of the bottle. In the room with my actual eye, it looked like it was constantly lit up. But here
brand
we're
new
able
technology,
to follow
right?
the light moving through the bottle. It may not look like it, but this is actually real.
The picoseconds are ticking off
the photons, so that's what you can see it. But when it's just going through the air, there's nothing to actually reflect the light. So yeah, it's only showing up in the bottle. It is interesting. It almost looks like a sort of an 80s film effect. It does, doesn't it? It looks like some sort of ghost flying into the room. But actually, that is light.
Okay. Fred, never in my life did I think I would get to see light traveling through a bottle frame by frame.
Yeah. With the picosecond counter.
10 trillion frames per second. Absolutely stunning. So thrilling. So when we look at the speed of light in different medium as compared to, we always talk about it in space or in a vacuum. If you shine light through glass, it's 50% slower than it is through a vacuum.
Slows down.
Normal glass.
Yep.
If you shine light through water, it's 25% slower than it is in a vacuum. So it's actually a lot faster than through glass, but a lot slower than through space.
Mm-hmm.
When light shines through Earth's atmosphere, through air, it's pretty close to the speed of light in a vacuum, Fred. It's only 300ths of 1% slower than it travels through a vacuum. So that's pretty cool.
Well, you know, what's really interesting is, you know, at Harvard, they were able to slow light down to 38 miles per hour.
Why?
You know, they shot a laser through extremely cold sodium atoms.
And they slowed it down so you could get on a motorcycle and race this beam of light going through these sodium atoms.
Well, so,
that's pretty cool.
If you could coat your car with sodium atoms, you know, those police radar detectors, he's only going 38 miles an hour.
That is so funny, Fred. So now, of course, when in our experiment, just like at Caltech, you know, when you introduce some milk into the water, so you get more scatter, and you can see the light,
see that light going through
better, then you're going to reduce the speed of light. Even when you only have water vapor in the bottle, you're still going to reduce the speed of light, but that reduction should be quantifiable. And it should be sufficiently minimal as to not prevent the one-way measurement of the speed of light if this experiment is valid.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You know, and space itself is not a perfect vacuum, right?
Good point.
So even with interstellar space containing anywhere from a million molecules per cubic centimeter down to just a, you know, 1,000 atoms per cubic meter. So it's not a perfect vacuum, even though, you know, some people think it is.
Right. And in fact, you know, at CERN over in Switzerland.
C-E-R-N?
Yeah. The Large Hadron Collider. CERN is the European Council on Nuclear Research.
Yep.
And they got that massive accelerator. Fred, it's enormous. They speed up these protons or positrons.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive.
And yeah, around a circle, there's pipe underground, and it's 46 kilometers. So what is that, 38 miles or something? The circle in circumference. And the pipe that they speed up this matter in so that they could collide things, that pipe is a vacuum. And they brag, well, for one, it's enormous. Imagine a pipe going that distance.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the inside of a cathedral. Imagine turning the inside of a cathedral into a vacuum approximately like what you have on the surface of the moon. That's what CERN brags. They say our vacuum is about that perfect. That's rarefied. But Fred, maybe they forgot a little of Walt Brownism. They probably forgot that all scientists work for Walt Brown. And it turns out that Earth's atmosphere, even though it thins out so much, our atmosphere extends beyond the moon. Yep. Isn't that astounding?
Yeah, it is.
Beyond the moon. If you want to find out more about that, go to rsr.org/moon. Look around. You'll see it. So that vacuum up there, they're bragging it's as good as the space around the moon. But it turns out that's not like how God created things. Imagine in interstellar space. They say it's not a pure vacuum. Fred, I bet you it's way more pure of a vacuum than they estimate that it is. There's even some evidence of that, like our ability to see distant objects with way more clarity than they expect. And so that really bewilders some of the astronomers who've looked at it. So interesting.
Yeah. So, Bob, back to the experiment. So what would we expect to see if we're comparing, you know, Einstein's ESC to Jason Lyle's ASC?
Okay. To RSR's stretch cosmology.
Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
So RSR's stretch cosmology, we take it for granted that the Einstein convention is not only valid, but it could be that when you run this experiment, or if we could find an experiment to measure the one-way speed of light, that we'll find that the speed of light is the same in both directions. And if that's true, the result will be as you and I described it, right? Camera one will have 10 frames of the pulse of light passing, and then 40 frames of blank, and then 10 frames again of the light returning. Camera two will have 10 frames, but then only 20 frames of blank, and then 10 frames returning. Camera three will have 10 frames of the light going in one direction, then immediately bouncing in 10 more frames. No blank frames for camera three.
Okay.
But what if Einstein's insight that light might be infinitely fast in one direction?
Yeah, as Jason Lyle proposes in his ASC theory.
Yeah, and half the speed in the other direction. If that's the case, then Jason Lyle says that the light is infinitely fast only as it's coming directly toward an observer. In this case, the light is going perpendicular to the cameras. So it's going like at a 90-degree angle, not a 0-degree toward them, not 180-degree away, but 90-degree perpendicular. So Einstein, if it turned out that his intuition that theoretically light could be traveling at infinite speed in one direction and half the speed of light in the other return trip, then I think you should see no frames of light in any of these cameras. The light would pass them infinitely fast, and you would only see them when you're looking dead on at the light.
Okay.
That's what I think.
Interesting.
So, Fred, what would this experiment show if the light was released from the laser traveling at infinite speed and it came back on its round trip at half the measured speed of light?
Well, first of all, you would think that cameras would record no frames on that initial trip to the back of the bottle
where
it gets reflected.
So when it's going in one direction, it's gone.
Yep.
And so you see virtually nothing.
Okay, Bob, but so what do we see on the return trip, though?
I think that you would see if Einstein's intuition was right. He didn't say light goes infinite in one direction, half the speed in the other. He said it's possible. So if it turned out that that's what was actually happening, you said on the trip out, it goes instantaneous. Yep. On the trip back, you would have each of the three cameras capturing the same number of frames of light passing their field of view from left to right, but you wouldn't be able to use that information to measure that speed. You couldn't use the information to measure the speed. In order to do that, the cameras would have to be in sync, and that's when you'd be sneaking in
yeah.
the round-trip speed of light.
Mm-hmm.
So what would happen is when you look at the video the camera captured, you would only see light going in one direction, not both directions.
Mm-hmm.
That's one interpretation of what you would see if the light was going infinitely fast in one direction and half the speed of light in the other. Now, how about Jason Lyle's ASC? It turns out this experiment configured exactly like this will not help determine whether Lyle's ASC is right or wrong, because by his model, by the formula he uses, the cosine of theta,
yeah.
the angle of the light as compared to the observer, it's at a 90-degree angle. It's passing the cameras in a perpendicular way. So his theory estimates that it would be traveling at the speed of light as currently measured.
Yes, you wouldn't be able to tell then.
In both directions.
Yep.
So the configuration could be used to show that, hey, Einstein had an uncanny insight and the speed of light is infinite in one direction and it's obviously half of what we thought it was in the return direction. Or how about this, Fred, how this could influence Jason Lyle's theory. If the speed of light turned out to be measurable only in one direction with these cameras and not in the outgoing direction because it was infinite, that would falsify Jason Lyle's ASC, because he says that the speed of light will not be infinite when it's going past
perpendicularly,
yeah. only when it's coming toward you. And when it's going away from you, it travels at half the speed of light. So potentially, if the cameras could only record light traveling in one direction and not in the other, then that would show Einstein uncanny insight, and it would falsify Jason Lyle. But we're not saying that would be the results.
Yeah.
We're, in fact, by stretch cosmology, which people could hear about from our program 2 weeks ago, or go to rsr.org/stretch, where God stretches out the heavens, the presumption in that model is that the speed of light is the same in both directions. That's the presumption.
Yeah.
And yes, it's a stipulation. It's by definition. But these cameras in this experiment just might be able to measure the one-way speed of light.
Well, you know, Dr. John Hartnett, his opinion changed on Lyle's ASC theory. He was initially opposed to it
when
it first came out in 2010. Yeah. So over time, he's become a strong supporter. So I'm kind of curious, Bob, what's your view of Jason Lyle's ASC and,
Fred,
maybe in light of stretch cosmology?
Well, if you think about what we have learned in the last 10 years, Fred, the journey studying quantum mechanics has been absolutely awesome. All the books, and it's got to be 100 articles and papers, and the programs we've done on it, all the research. And if you don't have that insight into what happens in physics with subatomic particles, with elementary particles, the fact that they do the most extraordinary things that you would never imagine unless you had a brilliant insight like Einstein did or tremendous experimental equipment. It's bewildering what happens in quantum mechanics. When you've learned all that and you consider the possibility that light could be instantaneous in one direction and half the speed we think it is in the other direction, you realize that that would not violate the spirit of quantum mechanics, because the way God designed the universe, it does things that are bewildering to us, and it tends to put the observer on a pedestal, that the observer collapses the waveform in the double slit experiment. So it could very well be. So if you don't have that background And you hear Jason Lyle say, well, light could come to us infinitely fast and it reflects off half the speed. You think, well, he's a quack, right? You think that's the stupidest thing I ever heard.
Yeah.
In fact, right up the road from the RSR studio is CU in Boulder, where Jason earned his master's degree and a PhD in astrophysics. And he used the SOHO spacecraft to investigate motions on the surface of the sun, as well as solar magnetism and subsurface weather. Fred, his thesis, I believe he discovered some of the fluid flow just below the surface of the sun. Just absolutely astounding.
Mm-hmm.
And so for Jason to propose this, it's coming from a brilliant mind who honors God, loves the Lord. He's a young earth creationist, and it's fully informed by physics. Fully
yes,
informed.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So as to whether or not, if Jason was right, what would that mean for stretch cosmology? Mm-hmm. Well, our cosmology that we've been promoting for many years, it takes what God did on day three, pulling the plants out of the ground, and uses that as an analogy for day four, hyperstellar nucleosynthesis, pulling the light out of the stars.
Mm-hmm.
But what is it, 11 times in five different authors of the Bible, they say that God stretched out the heavens. So clearly, when God put the galaxies where they are, the stars in their places, he named them all, mm-hmm. God stretched out the heavens. But our model goes further and says that God stretched the light to come from the star to the earth. So if Jason is correct and the light travels from the star at infinite speed to the earth, then there's no need for hyperstellar nucleosynthesis. So that certainly would be false.
Yeah. So the stretching of the light wouldn't have happened because it would just be instantaneous.
Yes. Right. So step number one, measure the one-way speed of light. And you said we had a grand prize if somebody could falsify our experiment.
Yeah, $10 gift certificate to Chick-fil-A.
Okay. Hey, if no one claims that prize, maybe you and I could split it.
There you go. All right.
So thank you, Fred.
We can split eight nuggets.
So thank you very much for doing another fun program. For Fred Williams and Real Science Radio, this is Bob Enyart. May God bless you.
Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real. That's what I'm talking about.